All right, everyone, welcome to another episode of O365A. In this episode, we have a guest with us, John Levesque, who's a senior platform evangelist for the Power Platform. So welcome, John, to the podcast. Glad to have you on. Maybe just start out by introducing yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. My name is John Levesque. I am the platform evangelist for the Power Platform. And most people are like, what the heck's an evangelist? When they hear that, they think of like church most of the time. And it's kind of the same thing. There's this whole awesome team that's making technology. And it's my job to let people know that that technology exists and how to use it and how to maximize their use of it as well. And so while they're all focused on features and things, I'm trying to build community and excitement around those products.
Very cool. Well, that's a great segue into sort of the first topic, talking about community. So, you know, looking at the whole low code, no code vision, and getting people building apps. Can you just tell us a bit about the Power Platform and Power App community and what's available, how it's changed over the years, and how people can get involved?
Yeah, absolutely. So, community, I think for us has a few different layers. At the core layer, we think of it as an actual like community site, a set of forums where there are questions and answers. And that area has changed a ton, where in the early days, it was a very strict come and ask a question and hopefully get an answer experience. Now we have hundreds of community users who are there answering questions every day. We have paid support staff who's there who answer questions. But even more than that, I think what we've begun to do is build areas of content curation, where the community builds amazing demos and videos and blogs and so much information. And so we've actually tried to start bringing a lot of that into the community. So we have a community blog, we have a video gallery. In Power Apps, we have an app share gallery, where if I make an app that I want to share with the community, I can host that file there. In Power Automate, there's the cookbook. In Virtual Agents, there's the bot share. And so all of these communities have these different galleries where you can watch videos, hundreds of hours. Like, I mean, you want to talk about free courseware where you can learn? The communities, all of them have over 100 videos. Even that brand new Power Automate or Power Virtual Agents community has over 100 videos in there now. And so they're awesome places to upskill and get connected. And then I think the second layer of community outside of that is like our social networks, right? We do a lot on Twitter, we do a lot on LinkedIn, and we're always trying to draw people into that ecosystem to keep them in our social media sphere, or to hopefully get connected to that community so that they can really draw some of that value that other people are putting out there for free.
Very cool. You know, but one of my questions was, I often wondered why it wasn't just rolled under the Microsoft tech community, but I think you probably just answered that, because it's number one, so broad, and you do so many different things, like offer app templates. Is that sort of the reason?
Yeah, I think, you know, the tech community is massive and awesome, and they have a huge collection of products. I think for us, it's just that their focus is true discussion amongst community, right? Where they just, it's a space for you all to come together, have conversation, and share that. For us, we think of it more as an all-encompassing way to help people get first the answer that they need, that burning thing met, but then also as a way to keep them engaged with not only the things we're making, but the things that everyone else in the ecosystem is making as well. And so we're always encouraging people, like, come and write on our blog. If you posted it on your blog, we don't even care. You can put it on our blog too. You could do a short blurb that describes the blog post and then link to yours, right? Like, the whole point here is we're trying to create a platform that shares, not only what we're doing, but what everyone else is doing. And so I think it is a bit different in the recipe. Whereas for them, it's a lot of conversation and event, and you know, managing content from events. For us, it's a ongoing conversation in a way that we're trying to keep people fully engaged with all the goodness that's happening around us. Now, and I think one thing I'll throw in real quick, just as a shameless plug, would love people to get more plugged into these areas. We always need more content. And so if you're looking for a place to put content to get eyes on it, definitely connect with me. I can get you pointed to the right place and the right community and get you an avenue where you can start showing your stuff, because we want that and the community needs it too.
Yeah, very cool. And what's like the one place you would tell people who want to get started in the Power Platform community? Where should they go?
Community.powerusers.com. And that's going to be a landing page that's going to give you a choice of which product community you'd like to jump into further. So if you're a big Power BI fan, there's a Power BI button. You go into that community, you see their galleries, their dashboards you can download, all that. Apps, you go into their area, see their discussion, their galleries, and so on and so forth for the other products. So it's a Power User or community.powerusers.com.
Awesome. Just to switch gears a bit, let's talk about, or maybe you could talk a little bit about the vision for where this is headed, Power Platform. I mean, all four of us have done our share of Power Platform work and integrations and stuff, and it's pretty amazing how it's all developed. Recently, I think Satya was on record saying, you know, over the next 5 years, there's going to be something like 500 million apps developed by low-code, no-code type folks. I think IDC is on record saying there's going to be 300 million in the next 3 years, digital apps and services. But I know there's a little more to it than just the low-code, no-code vision. Can you just take a minute and talk about a little bit about the journey, where you are now, but more importantly, where you're headed?
Totally. Yeah, I think, you know, when we started, the vision was that we would have these distinct products that offered certain feature set and allowed you to leverage a certain silo of technology. And the goal was that these things would all become one. And so I think we live somewhere in the middle of that. I don't know where on that journey exactly we are, but you can see it really starting to come together, right? And I like to look at things like, obviously my side of the world is more Power Automate and now Power Virtual Agents. I don't know if everyone knows that. I recently also got put in charge of the whole Power Virtual Agent side of the world. And so now both of those are my bread and butter. And so I use those a lot as the examples, because as you build a Power Virtual Agent, which if you haven't yet, definitely go check that out. We can talk about more of why you should and why it's the best time to get started with that too. But looking at those two products and how they now coalesce and come together, and even one layer deeper, how we can do those two products come together fully inside of a Teams window, right? Suddenly now you're seeing the beginnings of this vision coming to fruition. And I think that's the tell-all right there, where we know that the world exists in Teams, right? You know, I don't know what the public number is on what their MAU is. I know the internal one, so I'm not gonna spoil it, but it's a lot of users, right? There's a lot of people who use Teams every day, and it's become the central point of the business ecosystem, especially now with the world of COVID, right? Where it's our main connection hub. It's how we get business done. And so I think before, our vision really was to bring these products together, to see the bounds between them fade out and the experience that hand off between all of them become much more fluid and second nature. And so you see the beginnings of that now, where in Teams, I can open up the Power Virtual Agents creator fully in that experience. I can begin to build a bot. And then when I need to use a flow for that bot, I click a button in Virtual Agents, which then opens a new tab and opens Power Automate within Teams for me as well. And then when I hit to complete that action, that window closes, it injects that Power Automate, that flow into my bot right where it needs to be. And I continue authoring right where I left off. And then suddenly I get a message in Teams. I switch over to my message. Oh, no problem. I come right back to building my bot right in line, right? And so this vision of unification of this fitting into the ecosystem and fading away all the boundaries between these things, I think that's really a big part of it. And we're really starting to see that come to life now. Now, you know, our handoff points between apps and Automate, I think you see the automation platform where Automate and Virtual Agents are handing off really well. And then I think you see the application platform, Model, Canvas, AI Builder, all these things starting to hand off really well. I think what you'll begin to see next is how the automation side of the world and the app side of the world really start to also come together.
Yeah, that you really nailed it. I think the unification of all this is really where the power lies. So yeah, that's fantastic. Dino, I'll turn it over to you. I think you had some questions about Oakdale.
Yeah. Thanks. John, I mean, there's this, you know, speaking specifically around Teams, there's this bit of technology and that's binding everything together, and it's called Project Oakdale. And I was wondering if you could just
this week it is.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to make that joke? Do I get to make that joke? Okay.
Good. You're the guest. You can joke about whatever you want. Maybe just talk a little bit about Project Oakdale and what it means specifically to teams and why it's so significant.
Okay. So Project Oakdale, for those who are not in the know, is it's a type of database. It's a way to store information. And a lot of the office world is used to tabular data, Excel, right? They're used to using spreadsheets and maybe also SharePoint, where it's the same idea. I create rows and I create columns, and none of these things are interconnected, right? My one SharePoint list over here doesn't really talk to my other SharePoint list over here, unless I do some very advanced connection between the two to make them do that, right? Same thing with an Excel sheet. To get one Excel sheet to reference another Excel sheet takes me some major work to do, and I have to be very good at that tool. And so Project Oakdale, what it does is it brings you a new kind of data source to your fingertips for free, which is really the big, like, crazy part about it. And so what it does is it introduces this idea of relational data, where I don't have to really create a list anymore for a one-off event to capture user information, right? Instead, what I can do is I can create an entity that gathers user information. I can then create another entity for events, and then I can relate those two together to say, this person will go to this event. And it grants me the ability now to reuse data and understand my data and store my data in way more meaningful ways, instead of just tabular in a spreadsheet over here that we pass around with 10 different versions. It's one source of truth that's related to each other. And I think that, you know, for the average person, that's the best way that I can explain what is Project Oakdale, I think.
That's fantastic. It's powerful stuff and exciting. So you mentioned it was free. So is there anything licensing related with respect to Oakdale? I'm from Oakdale, but Oakdale.
It's free within Teams, and there are certain experiences that come along with that. And if you are looking for the full version of the Common Data Service, say you get introduced through Oakdale, you like this, now you want to move on to some additional features, there is an upgrade path to the full Common Data Service, and there is additional licensing that comes with that. But in that Oakdale realm, you are able to accomplish very certain things with no cost.
That actually brings me to the next question. It's like, so say I've taken the plunge, I wanted to experiment with Power Apps within Teams, you know, built up a table in Oakdale, and now I've built this thing up and it's doing what I want, and it's scaling to a point where I need to move it out of Teams and perhaps into full-blown Power Apps. So how is it even possible to move something from Oakdale into the full-blown Power Apps? I know just in messing around and building some basic apps, I don't, when I log into powerapps.microsoft.com, I don't see the apps that I build in Teams. So is there a process to upgrade, move an app from Oakdale into full Power Apps? Maybe talk about that.
Yeah, so I'm gonna caveat this. My Oakdale knowledge is not the strongest, and so I want to do a good honor to Mark Mercury, sure, so he doesn't kill me and I don't want to say the wrong thing. There is a path, and I am not 100% clear on what that is. And I know that it is absolutely something that they are focused on enriching and making an extremely easy path. And so, whatever that experience might be now, I know it will iterate as it is a focus, and I know that it is something that will be enabled.
So the important thing is that you don't have to worry about being orphaned when you go down this path. Start off the simplistic way, get into Teams, play around with Power Apps, and don't worry about being pigeonholed into that.
That's awesome. Exactly it. And it's similar in the virtual agents realm as well, where, you know, they're one of the points of contention for virtual agents is expensive licensing, $2,000 or $1,000 for 2,000 sessions, right? That's not insignificant. Similarly, they have a Teams experience where if you deploy the bot solely in Teams, that bot building experience is completely free. All uses, all sessions, everything is free. And it's that experience that lets you start light get your feet wet. And then when you decide that this is something that your team, organization, enterprise needs, then there's that path to then go and upgrade to that next thing.
Awesome. Good stuff. Thank you. And with that, I'm going to pass it over to Habib.
Yeah, so I think a really good segue is that we're having here. And I think, you know, as you've started out, you know, with the Power Platform, obviously from the beginning to now, what have you seen sort of the experience have been from like the apps or the flows that have been created to what they look like now, right? I mean,
man, yeah. building flows when Flow first came out was awful. It was so painful, right? Like if you put the expression in the wrong spot, like you'd click the mouse out of that box, it would delete the whole expression. It wouldn't save. There was no auto save. There was no state save whatsoever. Like there was so many crazy things about it. And so it's way more painless now, right? Like copy and paste makes life way easier. The addition of all of the date time connector and connector additions makes a big difference, where people no longer have to manually translate to and from UTC time, because an average office user absolutely knows what UTC time is, right? There's definitely it's a million years ahead, and Power Apps too, right? Like when Power Apps brought in IntelliSense 2.0 and it could begin to predict what I wanted to type in the box for me, right? Like it's definitely everything's going next level. And I think, again, I keep giving a nod to Power Virtual Agents, and it's because they're awesome. Like if you haven't seen their authoring experience, if you want to see what the true next level Power Platform authoring experience looks like, that's the one. This is the smartest tool we've ever created. It's the way that you author in it is, I keep looking at the Flow team. I'm like, why didn't you do this? Like when I put in variables, you should just create a condition right? Like I shouldn't have to go create a condition. We know that if I have variables, I need a condition, right? There were so many things that they did that were like, wow, this is genius. And so again, the experience continues to get easier, because although we are definitely focusing on the big things and new features, we are listening to refine those things as well. And so I think, you know, those little annoyances, I think, are the big problem, and those little annoyances one by one are getting checked off the list.
So with your experience and working and seeing like all the things being done within the community, so maybe talk to us about some of the scenarios that customers are using to, you know, solve some issues or improve efficiency using the Power Platform.
Oh man, there's so many. I'm about to pull up the customers.microsoft.com site. Like that's one thing I think our team does really well is tell stories. Samir Banger, he's in charge of that team. He does a great job. But I mean, I think, I share a couple stories pretty widely, and I'll share one of them here because it's in Canada. There's an oil and gas company in Canada who we've done some work with, and they implemented the Power Platform to begin to measure their wind farm. They felt like the telemetry coming from their wind farm left them lacking. They didn't understand weather patterns. They would shut the wind farm down often all the time leading up to weather events, right? So a little background, if you are unfamiliar with a wind farm, it's those big turbines in the sky. They produce power. And so those turbines, they have one major fear in life, and that major fear is ice. If the blades of the turbine get iced over, it strips all the bearings and how it spins, that turbine has to be taken down and repaired, and it costs millions of dollars. And so instead of dealing with that, most companies who own wind farms will just shut them off. Because if they're not turning, they're not collecting condensation in the same way, and they're not going to freeze over in the same way. No. It's a better process. So what happens then is, if you don't have good visibility into weather, you just turn off the farm to avoid the risk. And so they came to us when we did this program with them that we call bottom up innovation. And they brought this problem and they said, we don't know the visibility of our wind farm and the weather. And so I'll keep this short. They created an app with like 17 flows and a bunch of Azure functions. And this now takes all of their historical weather data and compares it to current weather data so that they can understand when ice happened in these conditions, it's likely to happen in these conditions. And net net, they're able to run their wind farm on average about 8 hours longer leading up to a weather event. And what that has translated to for them in the past, you know, 18 months at this point, I think, is somewhere in the area of $30 million of new profit because they're able to run the wind farm better. And so the beauty of it is an amalgamation of all the products. It does use app for the interface. It does use flows to transform and move data. It does use BI to visualize. It is a full tool that uses all the parts and the return on it, right? Like it costs their team, I think, something like $38,000 in man hours and whatever to tools and timing to build. And to have a 30 something million dollar return on it, it's obviously one of those like home run examples, but it's one of my favorite ones that shows like, huh, if we just thought about our business a little bit differently. And here's the best part. This didn't come out of the C-level. This didn't come out of some decision maker's office. This happened because one of the field guys from the wind farm attended one of our trainings and gave the idea that we don't know shit about the weather.
Awesome. Fantastic. Awesome. So I'll pass it over to Michael for.
Yeah, I mean, I think you've been kind of talking about the power of virtual agents coming up and the fact that, you know, it's free in Teams. I'm wondering with there's a whole bunch of app templates for Microsoft Teams, right? So getting businesses to import, you know, known cases or known scenarios to kind of unlock things. So like knowledge bots and help desk bots and HR bots and stuff like that. Those are still all based on like the bot framework. You're importing Azure Compute. Are you thinking that maybe those will start getting rejigged to be virtual agents so that we can really harness the no code or low cost extensibility of the Teams platform?
I mean, I would say so. If you asked me to place a bet, I would say for sure, just because like, I mean, I can't, when I sit there and I stack up the reasons, there's no good reason not to. With the way of everything else going, low code, citizen maker empowerment, I see this being no different. And especially because the authoring experience is the easiest of the whole platform, I think even that, you know, drives that idea further even more. Where, like, I think when people see it, even if they don't need a chat bot, they want to make one. Every time I do a demo and show people the real power of how this should be done, they're like, I didn't even know I needed a chat bot, but now I need a chat bot.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I run into customers that, you know, they deploy the Q&A bot, you know, they download the template and then the minute they want to try and customize something, it's like, oh, now we need an Azure developer to deal with the bot framework and we need to do some .NET coding and yep. Starts going down this rabbit hole or they, you know, spend, you know, 6 months building out a bot from scratch and then they import it and they're like, oh, we should maybe redo this using virtual agents because, you know, all that cost.
You know what? If you're in that place and feeling that pain, come on to virtual agents. We'll take care of you.
Go ahead. I was just going to say, so it seems like the citizen developers kind of being moved into doing it within Teams, like Project Oakdale, the virtual agents, the licensing kind of being all encompassing for when you're building it in those environments.
Yep.
Is that maybe the shift? Because I'm seeing a lot of, you know, some issues around licensing, you know, as being a barrier for new customers. Yep. Is this kind of the way of getting beyond that? Is like, okay, now you don't have to do with like plan licensing and premium licensing and the, you know, the session licensing and all those different licensing if you stay within Teams?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, I mean, believe it or not, the licensing team with every decision really has tried to make things easier. The problem is that when you do that in a silo, you don't always often understand like what the other licensing will do to that. Now, there is a new team that has been dedicated to understanding licensing and coming up with things. And so Like on the Power Automate side, I'm very proud of our new licensing structure. I think it is actually very easy to understand in comparison to what it used to be. I know that people still struggle with the app side. And so to answer the question, absolutely yes. The goal has always been to try and make this easy to say, hey, look at this awesome set of tools. I built something useful to me. Like, this is something we should all look at, right? And so it always had that maker in mind, right? Where it's me as the maker, I need to get something done. Awesome, here's the tool, right? And then from there, the goal should be, wow, hey, everybody, look at how much time I saved by doing it this way. We should all do it this way, right? And so there has been that barrier where that one person has been able to do that, maybe in like the community tenant or in a demo or a trial or whatever. But then to get beyond that, to include other people has been a problem. So I think, yes, to bring it to teams, to remove some of that licensing restriction, to give a bigger sandbox to say, here, please play, have fun, build cool things. It is all with the goal that when they're ready to go to that next level, that they understand that this tool is valuable and that premium licensing does really bring some valuable additional features as well, right? But at the same time, you know, thanks to the Teams team, actually, they've been great to work with. They've helped us on a lot of bringing this stuff in and being very understanding and helpful to how it all works. And so absolutely, yes, emphatically, yes.
Excellent. Maybe with that, Hab, I'll throw it to you to kick off the round table.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, in our talk off camera, we were, you know, we were just chatting about, you know, some of the experiences that we had with regards to, you know, building our flows, and, you know, some power ups and whatnot. And then, you know, maybe Michael, cause you're the one that I guess has done the most out of all of us, maybe talk about some of your experiences with that.
Yeah. I mean, when you were mentioning that there's been connectors around dealing with like time conversion and stuff like that, you know what? It's almost like a black art dealing with calendar items. So when you get into the realm of reoccurring meetings, it's shocking what's going on behind the scenes on the Exchange side. And so simple flows, like I have a flow that basically takes, I have accounts and a couple customer tenants. I just take all my calendar items and put them in one calendar. And then I have that as my scheduling calendar. And the amount of times I'm hit with throttling on the detection of the calendar, is there any thoughts around like dealing with calendar items and that, it, you know, you just look at the calendar item and it seems like trigger 50 runs.
Yeah, I mean, I think that is a problem with the like the graph behind the scene and how like we pull all those items and how it gives information. And so, yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for that. What I can say is there are certain areas where we're seeing throttling be a problem, and I see threads every day where we are trying to figure all that out and you know, fix API counts and fix throttling limits and adjust something here and adjust something there. And so that you definitely, you know, there's a lot of that continuous change. Let's try this. And so it is something we're thinking about. I can't speak specifically to Outlook, just again, because of how Graph is and how the connectors are built. But, you know, my best suggestion would be, you know, to let us know when you're experiencing throttling. And if you feel like you shouldn't be experiencing it for such things. I think that kind of feedback, especially, you know, as MVPs and having access to the DL, I know not everyone has that access. And so this is not a one size fits all solution, but for some of the things that some of you guys might feel, I think there's some channels there where we do actually welcome that feedback and people do take it to action. And I know sometimes it just feels like a shout into the void, but I promise it's not.
I think Michael and I are going to start a support group on that.
Yeah, calendar flows.
Calendar flows. Yeah.
For calendar flows, I started just creating one ICS and then attaching that to things. So I make the event ahead of time, and then I build all my flows using that pre-created ICS so I can avoid a lot of that madness.
I have one item that has come up recently is flows that are inactive being suspended, so basically disabled. And this is like from a citizen developer, like I have a whole bunch of like form surveys, right? And so I have, you know, surveys for different workshops I do. And so I just throw out a short URL for it. And I might not use that survey for, you know, 4 months or whatever. But when someone fills out the first survey, I get an email or puts into Planner. And now I'm like, you know, oh, it's suspended. And I go in there and I'm playing with the on off switch for a few times trying to get it to turn on. Is that, talk about the logic around that?
Yeah, I wish I knew. So this is I'm not going to throw my team under the bus, right? Somebody made a decision thinking that there would be a good decision, right? That we would kill inactive flows and nobody would mind, and that would make everyone happy because people who aren't getting value wouldn't have flow notifications and resources could be saved and everybody's happy. But I think the problem is that a scheduled flow specifically, I think for me, is the one that really bothers me being included in that. Because a scheduled flow is set to only run at certain times, and it might be set to not run every 60 days, but it's critical because I created a schedule for it, right?
Yeah.
And so that's the one that I have been bothered by, and that's the one that I've seen some customers bothered by, and it is something right now that we are actively working to figure out and fix for sure.
Perfect.
Yes, I knew that one was going to come up. I was waiting for it.
Yeah, speaking of the calendar items, one of the pains I've had over the year and a half, and it, as you said, John, it's gotten better, but I love the pre-built templates. It's really just easy to get started and to get things working. And being a developer, it's always easier to edit something than to create it from scratch. So thumbs up. Having said that, I saw a cartoon posted to Twitter this past week that summed it up really well. It was a cartoon of a guy trying to adjust Venetian blinds. And he said, "This is me trying to edit a flow, a Microsoft flow." Nice. Yeah, I've sort of had that experience where I get something up and running and configure it. And then editing it is can be really fickle. And I'm sure you've probably heard that feedback before. I've seen some improvements, but does the team sort of recognize that? And I guess maybe have some plans to sort of just make the editing experience a bit better.
So there is actually, I don't know if you've seen it yet. I have tried to publicize it. I don't use it too much in my videos because it's not GA yet. But there is an experimental feature where you can turn on the new editor experience. And so if you haven't tried that yet, it is there. And the reason it's not GA yet is because actually in Power Automate, there are 15 or 16 actual editors, not just one. Depending on where you are in Teams or in the web or in mobile or what version of web or what version of this or that, there's actually like they maintain 15 or 16 different versions of the editor. And so they're now rebuilding all those with this new interface, which is way fantastic. Like one of the biggest complaints we had was the tiny little box for expressions. The box for expressions now opens under the item and is like a full multi-line text box. You have lots of room. That's one of the things. The other is you know, clicking where you would have to click back in a box after inserting dynamic content. The cursor moves after the dynamic content now. It's those little things in the editing process that they are trying to fix. And if you haven't seen it yet, go turn on experimental features, check out that editor. But just recognize it's not GA yet. And so there's always that warning. It's preview. It's not going to work fully as intended. When it goes fully GA, then, you know, that'll obviously be the thing. But you can go check it out now.
Cool. I haven't tried that. So, yeah, I will.
Sweet.
Good
Sweet.
Tip.
Awesome. So, yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, I'm not going to dig into the calendar stuff, but as Michael did, but I definitely find it interesting of what's happening in the background that you don't know about from an Exchange perspective. You know, so I thought that was pretty interesting. I get a lot of notifications now, and that's the only reason I've been aware of sort of what's happening. But anyways, that being said, honestly, it's, it was great having you on, John. I really appreciate you having a chat with us and giving us some of your insight of, you know, the from the community perspective, and you know, maybe some of the things that are being utilized in the field and stuff like that. It's been awesome. So I really appreciate you coming on. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you guys very much for having me.
Awesome. So thanks everybody for listening in, and hopefully we'll catch you on our next episode.
Thanks.
See you.
Bye-bye.